For joining us as we continue our look at what man is to believe concerning God. But in fact, this morning we are changing series. So we've completed now, in the previous videos, working through the larger catechism. This morning, we began a look at the shorter catechism. Several years ago, I was asking Danny Olinger, the General Secretary of Christian Education, because he keeps these records of who's recited the shorter catechism, but they've never kept records of the larger catechism because, well, let's be honest, it's very daunting and not many try it even. But every Sunday we read the encouragements in the bulletin to continue working on the shorter catechism. B.B. Warfield once quipped, he says, "Catechism boys grow up to be catechism men." And what he meant by this is that this becomes, as it were, a bulwark, or a filing system. So as one reads and meditates on the scriptures, it's not that this becomes the lens. This becomes a tool whereby you can understand what's going on. I mean, many years I've read the Bible, but it's not till all of a sudden, wait a second, this is talking about that as you draw together elements from the catechism. And so this morning we're going to begin with the very famous question and answer one. It's one that is such that it's almost, you know, many of you heard me talk about gang signs. It's a gang sign. I once saw a comic where somebody was trying to find somebody, and they knew that this person who was hiding was a Presbyterian. So they asked the question, "What is the chief end of man?" And there, the person hiding couldn't help. You go, "Man, you couldn't." And they throw their hands up because it's such an instinctual answer. And even yesterday, I was talking with my kids, and I was asking them, substituting, "What is your chief end?" Because one of the differences between the Westminster Standards and, say, the Heidelberg Catechism is that the Heidelberg gets what is your only, my only. It's in that first and second person, whereas the shorter catechism stays in the third person, but yet it still applies in that first person sense. So this morning, what is the chief end of man? Man's chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. Another way that we might say this, because we don't speak in the language of ends, because when you read older texts, both theological, philosophical, and whatnot, you see where you have ultimate ends, subordinate ends, contingent subordinate ends. And so we might phrase it in the simpler form of, what's the meaning of life? What is your purpose? But it's, what is the goal of your life? What is the telos? The Greek word telos mean end or purpose or goal. So what is man's chief end? It is that which all of life is subservient to. Every element of your life. And notice the grammar of this thing. You don't have two ends. It's not glorifying God and enjoying him. We won't go with John Piper's altering, glorifying God, to glorify God by enjoying him forever. No. These, seemingly two, are in fact one. You can't do the one without the other. You can't enjoy God without glorifying him. You can't glorify God without enjoying him. They are not distinct. They are inseparable. All nations you have made shall come and worship before you, O Lord, and shall glorify your name. See, that's the purpose of the nations. Why does the United States exist? To glorify God and to enjoy him forever. Why does the nation of Germany exist? To glorify God and enjoy him forever. Why does China exist? To glorify God and to enjoy him forever. Why does Sri Lanka exist? To glorify God and enjoy him forever. And you can just fill it in. This is why God made the nations. At Babel, he separated them out because as they came together in this false unity around the Tower of Babel, you end up getting this God state developing where the rulers become the gods and the gods become the rulers, and it's this amalgamation of Satanism. And so even today you see where there is a centralization of power, you see a deification of the state, as opposed to seeing that God created the nations for his own glory, that they might glorify and enjoy him. Sorry, Jean-Jacques Rousseau and all the John Locke. Your people shall all be righteous. They shall possess the land forever, the branch of my planting, the work of my hands, that I might be glorified. Why has he created the church? That he might be glorified and enjoyed forever. Why does God establish the work of the hands of his people? That they might glorify him and enjoy him. So you're bought with a price, so glorify God in your body. There's amongst, unfortunately, many in the church today think that they can glorify God and enjoy him by singing a few songs and sitting through a sermon on Sunday. As we shall see, this question, so easily recited, will take 106 questions to describe what that means. That's right, there are 107 questions in the shorter catechisms, and so all 107 questions can be summarized in man's chief end is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. We can see what man is to believe concerning God. Why? That they might glorify him and enjoy him. What duties does God require of man? That they might glorify him and enjoy him. So whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Worthy you are, Lord and God, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and by your will they existed and were created. So God created all things for his own glory, that they might enjoy him. So we've been talking glorifying in particular, but now think about enjoying him. What does that mean? The Lord is my chosen portion and my cup, you hold my lot. The lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance. I bless the Lord who gives me counsel. In the night also my heart instructs me. I have set the Lord always before me because he is at my right hand. I shall not be shaken. Therefore my heart is glad and my whole being rejoices. My flesh also dwells secure, for you will not abandon my soul to Sheol, or let your Holy One see corruption. You make known to me the path of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. There is this idea that, well, Christians should be like Eeyore. Well, it's just going to go this way. I'm just going to suffer. It is opposed to this expectation of joy. Now, this develops because we also know that we are told that the portion of Christians here in this life is tribulation, is suffering. And yet, we think, well, I guess I'm going to suffer, so I guess I'll just have to do with it. No, that is to undermine, as we shall see, Paul himself says, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice always in suffering and in glory and joy and in sadness. We rejoice in the Lord. Blessed are the people to whom such blessings fall. Blessed are the people whose God is the Lord. This word blessed, we use it all the time. Oh, I'm so blessed. This is blessed. We can't just reduce it to happiness, but it has a deep connection to enjoyment. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God will himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. Yes, we have not reached there. We don't bring in this idea that we must have that now. But yet, there is joy in walking with Christ. And so, as we walk through the shorter catechism, let us remember that all of this, whether we're talking about sanctification, we're talking about the various elements of prayer, whether we're talking about the Ten Commandments, what man has believed concerning God and what duties God requires of man. It's all to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. There is no glorifying of God that does not include enjoying God. Thank you for joining us, and please join us as we look through and walk through the Shorter Catechism. Thank you for joining us, and God bless.